Sports Radio Jax is back after a 7-day hiatus, and this week we're bigger and better than ever. Coming up over the next hour, Max Pacioretty, March Madness, the Miami Heat, Teacher's Pension Plan, Adrian Peterson, and an American League preview for the ages. Let's get this party started. Welcome to another episode of The Jax. As always, you can listen to us live at centennialondemand.com/centennial-internet-radio, or you can download the podcast by clicking on Centennial Internet Radio. You can also hit us up on Twitter at SportsJax. Got it? Good. As always, I'm Josh Lewinberg. And, as always, Aaron Karolnik is to my left.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Great to be back.
And I give you the lovely and talented Jimmy Mangos.
Hello, hello.
What's going on, boys?
How you guys doing? How was the week off?
Not bad. Pretty, relaxing.
What did you do, Jimmy?
Well,
Keep it clean, Jimmy.
I didn't too much. I relaxed a lot, slept a lot, went out a lot with friends, caught up in some things that I missed for the past 2 months.
Any big parties in Mississauga over the week?
No, but I made my own parties with my own friends. We had a good time, so... How about you guys?
What do you do? AK, how was the Sunshine State? Ooh, that's
yes,
a hard word to say.
I spent the week in beautiful Deerfield Beach, Florida.
Well, look at
hanging
that.
Out with my parents, who I haven't seen in quite some time, which was nice, of course. Saw some cool sporting events.
The folks are living up in Florida, that's correct?
Yeah. Okay. They reside there permanently, which is nice for me. Well, at the same time, I miss them, of course. Shout outs to my mom and dad, who actually are now listeners of the show.
Actually, you don't know this, but I just got off the phone with Mr. and Mrs. Karolnik.
Really?
Yep. And very nice people, by the way. Lovely people. They actually gave me some footage, some recordings of your week in Florida.
Really? Okay, well...
And I actually haven't heard this myself. As I said, they just sent it over. So let's give it a listen.
Okay.
You can't live down here. This is where people come to die. Not you. Older people.
Don't eat cookies for breakfast. I'll fix you something. How about feta cheese omelet?
That sounds great, Mom. You feed him, he'll never leave.
I don't have any feta. How about cottage cheese and egg beaters?
I guess.
The Karolniks, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, it's actually me and my dad were talking about similarities between Del Boca Vista and where my parents stay, so certainly a very appropriate comparison.
What else did you do? You got some golf in there as well?
I went to Doral in Doral, Florida, near Miami, which was great to see the Cadillac Championship. Well, I'm a big golf fan, so seeing my boys in action was great. Congratulations to Nick Watney, who took down the Cadillac Championship this week.
Stand up.
Good stuff.
What about you, Josh? What did you do?
I actually went to Boston. Spent some days in Beantown.
How was that?
It could have gone better. I wanted to see some sports, but... Bruins, did you know Bruins tickets are very hard to come by in Boston?
I didn't know that.
They are. Even the scalpers were looking to buy, so.
So, did you go out a lot during your time
How's the Boston nightlife?
Pretty good. Not too bad. They don't have a lot of cabs in Boston. I had to do a lot of walking, which, as you know, I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, walking's not good.
What about the ladies in Boston? How are they?
Not too bad. They got the accent, which I like.
Oh.
They're calling me Josh.
Josh.
I like that.
Yeah, that's nice.
All right, so let's get to it, because as you know, we were off for a couple weeks, so a lot went down, a lot of controversial issues, and let's start with what's probably at the top of the list, in my mind anyways, the hit heard around the nation, at least in Canada anyways.
Not so much in the States.
Do they care about this?
Actually, when I went to the Florida Panther Blackhawk game on the Tuesday night that the incident occurred, the Pacioretty Chara incident. And I remember watching sports that maybe the last 2 minutes they showed the hit. So obviously not nearly as big a deal in the States, just in Florida as it is here in Canada.
So as I'm sure you know, last Tuesday night, a Zdeno Chara hit caused Max Pacioretty to smack his head into the, what are we going with here? Stanchion? Partition? Turnbuckle?
I like stanchion. It's an interesting spelling of the word.
It was a pole.
Pole?
Should we use the pole? Okay, he smashed his head into the pole in Montreal and suffered a severe concussion. Fractured vertebrae, which essentially means broken neck. No?
Yeah.
I'm no scientist or anything.
No, definitely
but,
not.
And Chara received a major for interference, a game misconduct, but no suspensions or fines from the NHL.
At least that guy's doing well. What's his name? The guy that got...
Pacioretty?
Yeah, he's tweeting about what happened.
Yeah, he got Twitter to thank all the people who are sending him letters.
He's
and stuff.
Okay.
Now, Jimmy, I know you're not a huge hockey fan, which is actually probably better in this case. What do you think when you see something like this happen? How does it make you view the NHL?
Well, when I saw that hit, it didn't look that dirty to me. I mean... Charles is a big guy. Was the biggest guy in the NHL right now?
6 foot nine.
Yeah, and he didn't
in NHL history.
Yeah, it looked like he kind of just shoved him a bit, and I guess he was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Exactly,
hitting his head at the pole. I mean, what are the odds of that happening, really?
Yeah, I think that's fair, but you also have to consider when you get a high sticking penalty. It doesn't matter if you unintentionally high stick someone and it causes blood; you still get a penalty for it. You know, so
right.
Unfortunately, Chara broke Max Pacioretty's neck, and I think he deserves to be.
Yeah, but obviously, he didn't try to break his neck, which is, it just happened. You know, the game goes by so fast.
Intent is a huge issue here, and if you're the NHL and you're handing down or debating whether to hand down a suspension, do you consider intent?
See, but I don't know how you really judge intent in this issue. You know, like, it's not like it's the Adjustment Bureau with Matt Damon and that dude from Mad Men where the future's predetermined or something like that.
Don Draper?
We don't know what did I say?
Mad Men, you said.
No, the guy from Mad Men's also in the movie.
Don Draper, that's his name.
No, in the show.
But
all right, whatever. We'll continue. Right. In any case, we don't know what was going on exactly in Char's mind at the time. We know that there was some beef between the two in an incident that occurred early this year, but... Intent is a very, very dicey subject that you just really don't know what was going on.
The most amazing part of this all is that Montreal police have been instructed to look into this, investigate a little bit. What happens if he gets charged but not suspended or fined by the NHL? How would that make the NHL look?
How could you possibly charge? I think even when you go back to McSorley and Brashear back in, when was that, maybe 10 years ago?
That was a clean hit, though. Come on. I'm just kidding.
Yes, please, Jimmy. The police really have no place in an issue like this. I think it's more of a publicity stunt, much like we saw with Air Canada and Via Rail recently, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't think. I think it's more just posturing.
The issue with Air Canada and Via Rail, they don't want their names attached to the NHL because at this point they believe that the league isn't policing their players correctly. So to suspend or not to suspend? That's the question.
See, like I think that ultimately the NHL made the brave decision not to suspend. If they suspended Chara for 3 or 4 games, you know, I think it might have appeased a lot of people who were calling for Chara's head in this issue. I think you probably still have people calling for 20 games, the rest of the season suspensions. But by not suspending him, Chara doesn't have a history of, I don't think he's ever been suspended in his career. That needs to be taken into account. If it was Matt Cook or Chris Pronger, guys who have been suspended many times in their career, executing a hit like this that broke Pacioretty's neck, it would be different. But, you know, I think that not setting a precedent here is an important part.
I still take issue to it. I mean, I'm definitely for suspend, and I don't even think that it was that bad of a hit. I mean, it was interference, so it wasn't a legal hit. But at the same time, again, we mentioned intent. Did he intend on breaking his neck? Obviously not. Does that matter? No. When you're on the ice, when you're as big as Chara is, and even any of these NHL players, these are big guys. They're going at a high speed, and the bottom line of the matter is they're responsible for other people's lives when they're on the ice. So you can't be reckless. You can't take risks like that when you're in that specific part of the ice. And I mean, Chara knows where he was. He obviously, well, I don't want to say obviously, I don't believe he meant to get him into the partition there. But at the same time, he's played 916 career NHL games. He's played 33 games at the Bell Center in Montreal. You have to have an idea of where you are in the ice, and you have to limit the risks that you take that could potentially lead to an NHL player dying on the ice. And we can't have that.
I think that's very fair. I believe that the Bell Center was planning to alter their the partition, stanchion, poles, whatever you want to call it, even after the season was over. So I know Don Cherry on Hockey Night in Canada proposed that they get rid of that, or like alter the alignment of the stanchion so it's more of a, not horizontal, but maybe not as vertical, so maybe like more of a 45-degree angle compared to a 90-degree angle where the stanchion is. But we've seen, like, I'm going back to Don Cherry, I can't believe I'm referencing him in a legitimate argument, but we have seen numerous instances of people running into stanchions like that, even Drew Doughty recently. So the stanchion issue is there. It's just unfortunate that an issue like this had to occur.
The key word here is responsibility on all angles. And I mean, it's the NHL's responsibility to ensure that their rinks all across the league are safe, which in this case we learned that they're not, and they're looking into that now, but it shouldn't take something like this to prompt that. And like I said, responsibility on the part of the players, and that's why I think a suspension should have been assigned to...
How long? Suspension?
10 games.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you also have to set precedent that you're going to police these incidents, and you have to... what else is going to help these players almost fear being reckless and fear putting players in a situation where they could suffer a career-ending or life-threatening injury other than to suspend? It's the only thing. We see it in other leagues. We see it in the NBA. We see it in the NFL. Whether or not they mean to do something like this is irrelevant. It's whether or not they did and whether or not they put somebody in a position where they're at risk.
So do you think it's time for the NHL to possibly levy suspensions based on the extent of an injury that's caused by a player? Is that what you're saying? Because that's
not entirely, because there's a lot of incidents where something could have happened much worse than what actually happened, but it's still a hit that put somebody at risk and that compromised the other player. So, I mean, it's a tough job. It's definitely a tough job, and I don't envy what the NHL deals with, but... They have to look through everything that happens, and they have to really be diligent about setting an example in situations where these concussions are taking place. How many concussions have we talked about this year?
It's amazing.
It's absurd. And this is almost a perfect way to segue into Sidney Crosby, who's back on the ice, but this is the best player in the game who hasn't played in 30 games, and instead of talking about what would have been a career year for Crosby, we're talking about concussions yet again.
Yeah, it is definitely a shame with Crosby. The guy obviously was having a career year, and you know, a statement released by Commissioner Gary Bettman recently said that 80 concussions have occurred so far this year. That's up from 75, which occurred the entire year last year.
Unbelievable.
Obviously, that's concerning, but you know, the reality is the NHL changes post lockout, whether it was removing the obstruction or removing a red line or adding the trapezoid. These all contributed to speeding up the game, and ultimately, when you change the game, there's going to be other changes.
Or maybe there's not enough respect for each player. Like in the past, there was a lot of respect between each other, but now you don't see like the respect they have this day in the NHL.
No, that's a major issue as well. And the NHL has an opportunity here with the potential upcoming lockouts in the NFL and in the NBA to grow their game, especially in the U.S. And the way that this game is being viewed right now is not doing the game any justice, because instead of talking about actual gameplay, who wins, who loses, who's going to win the Stanley Cup, no one cares at the moment. It's all about this hit. It's all about changes that need to be made to the game. It's all about the best player in the game missing 30 games, and that's not doing this game any justice, especially not in the U.S.
It's funny how you talk about that, because I did go to the Florida Panthers game when I was down in Florida, and constantly this woman behind me was screaming, "We want blood! We want blood! Hits! Blood!" Just screaming the entire game. This was a great game, too. It wasn't a normal, boring Florida Panthers game. So I think a lot of Americans, regardless of what happens with this, all they care about is fighting, all they care about is big hits, and it's just not going to change regardless of what is done about this issue or concussions or headshots. It's just the way it is.
Fair enough. Jimmy, anything more to say on the matter?
I completely agree with all you guys, what you said. You guys said it pretty well. So
now, one thing that Jimmy Mangos is very passionate about is the upcoming March Madness tournament. We're all very excited, aren't we, boys?
Who isn't excited?
You got your brackets ready?
Not quite. You know, I made some moves here and there. I'm not really sure.
Well, we don't want to beat this thing to death before it even starts, but we did go out and we got ourselves an NCAA correspondent, Giannis Bunkus, who's out in the field, and he's going to be giving us some updates over the next few weeks. March Madness, we call this segment 60 Seconds of Madness. So I'm going to toss it over to Giannis Bunkus. Go ahead, Giannis.
What's what's up? You got J-Bunk right here. I'm going to give you a little bit of preview on the madness. Anyways, big-time Canadian action in this tournament, boys. I got Gonzaga playing in a 10 seed. They got three Canadian guys. We got Syracuse with Chris Joseph, their leading scorer, leading the way for them in a 3 seed. I love me some Texas basketball, baby. Chris Joseph, Tristan Thompson. Oh, baby, baby. Give it to me all day long. All right, what else do we got? I got the Washington Huskies upsetting UNC in the second round. Read it and weep it. Also, Michigan State, they're going to ice out a Pac-10 team in UCLA in the first round. What else we got? Notre Dame not being a 1 seed? Are you kidding? Florida at a number 2 seed? Are you kidding me? This team is garbage. The SEC is garbage. They have no business being in a number 2 seed. You got to give it to somebody else. Even the BYU Cougars, they finished in the 3rd seed. They're a better team than Florida. I don't care if they're missing that power forward. This is a top flight program. They deserve that 2 seed. Oh, what else we got? Kansas, they're going to roll this tournament. They're going number 1, baby. They're going to roll all the way to victory.
We got to stop giving them so much coffee.
Yeah, Giannis. Excellent job, Giannis. Very concise, very interesting. Greatly appreciated.
We'll check back with Giannis in the future as the tournament gets underway. But let's take a quick look at this ourselves. Who you got in the tournament? Who's winning this whole thing, AK?
You know, before yesterday, I had Kansas, just like Giannis, I had Kansas winning the tournament. But big news broke yesterday about Kyrie Irving, Duke's star recruit from this past freshman, Kyrie Irving. He will be returning for the tournament. I think that certainly pushes my dedication in the tournament and my pick to win the tournament into Duke.
I'd like to disagree with Giannis when he's talked about Michigan State rolling over UCLA. UCLA is a great team. Let me just tell you that. I mean, they have beaten BYU, who's a number 2 seed. They've beaten St. John's, and they've beaten Arizona. So I have UCLA going to Elite Eight, but my championship team that I like is also Duke. But I'm kind of on the fence with that. I kind of like Purdue as well as a sleeper, so because I love Juwan Johnson. But
you do love Juwan.
I'm going to say Duke over Purdue in the finals.
Okay.
I'm going to agree with my boy Giannis in this case, and I'm going to have to go with Kansas. I think depth is going to play a huge part in this tournament rather than star power. Not to say that my boys in Kansas don't have any star power over there. But they're a deep team. I think the deepest team in the tournament, and I think that's going to that's going to pay dividends once we get deep into this thing. So,
Kansas, what about, baby? Who are your sleepers, like upset picks?
I actually like Michigan State, too. Sorry, Jimmy.
It's not a big upset, but
Michigan State's a quality up. I do like Washington. I think Isaiah could definitely lead them quite a far away.
I have Richmond in the Sweet 16, and I have, I think, Old Dominion Sweet 16.
Ooh, Old Dominion. That's a trendy sleeper pick there, Jimmy.
There's no doubt we're going to see an emotional roller coaster in the NCAA over the next few weeks. But the one emotional roller coaster that's caught my attention over the last week is what's going down in Miami. How about that? How about that? We got some crying. We've got some. I don't think they're crying anymore, though. Wow.
No.
They're balling recently. So let's break this down a little bit. Just about a week ago, the Heat had lost 5 games in a row, which was their longest losing streak since this Big 3 was put together in Miami. After a 1-point loss to the Bulls, Eric Spoelstra revealed to the media that a member or several members of the team were crying in the locker room. And obviously, the media jumped all over that. Whether or not it was exaggerated or not, who knows. But then, when they're at their ultimate low, which it looked like they were, they go on, they beat the Lakers for the second time this year. They then destroy the Grizzlies by 33, which was their highest margin of victory on the season, and then they beat the NBA's best team, the Spurs, by 30. So what do you make of this situation? Are the Heat back?
Well, they still have to beat Chicago and Boston first. I mean, they're 0-6 against
the figured he'd
teams.
Say that.
But let's address the crying first.
Right,
do you actually think people were crying in the locker room?
Well,
was that
the
more
coach
of
a
motivational ploy by Spoelstra?
I don't think nobody cried over a regular season game. Like, come on.
Oh, I think it was a slip of the tongue. I think that he regrets very much to this day that he let that slip. I mean, you have to understand, if you're the Miami Heat, that you put all this on yourself. The microscope is on you at this point. Everything you do is going to be magnified. Everything you do is going to be exaggerated. And the last thing that you want to give, not even just the media, but other NBA players, the knowledge that your team is in the locker room crying.
Yeah. If you were to bet on one Miami Heat player crying, who would you bet on, Jimmy?
Let me see.
Well, he says he didn't do it.
I have to go with Chris Bosh, man. Come on.
It's the easy pick.
You have to.
It's the easy
pick. Who else could it be?
Maybe it's Zdrunas. Was weeping in LeBron's arms.
Maybe Eddie House. He looks like a little, you know,
Zdrunas.
Maybe
his foot was hurting punk. That day too.
Don't finish it. Don't finish it. Little
little punk. I'll stick
little punk. Okay. No. Fair enough. Maybe Mario Chalmers.
Yeah.
Chalmers.
Maybe.
What has he done? Well, he's been all right, I guess.
Well, they look to be back on track even after all the crying. So are they the favorites in the East now?
No, like, you can't say that.
After beating the Lakers and the Spurs, yeah, the West.
Like I
elite?
Said before, they're still 0-6 compared against Boston and the Bulls. They had to beat those teams. They're not going to play the Lakers in the playoffs. Lakers in the West. They don't have to worry about the Lakers.
Yeah.
They have to worry about these two teams. They can't even beat the Knicks either.
I think it is important to note that even after the victory over Memphis was impressive, but Rudy Gay wasn't playing. The victory over the Lakers and the Spurs were huge. But this is still a team, as you said, 3-10 against the top five teams in the NBA. They're 18-18 overall against winning teams. So I still have an issue with their ability to beat good teams and to finish games that are close, that are decided by 5 points or less. They still have a worse winning percentage.
Remember
in those
though,
games than the Cavs.
Remember the Lakers in the fourth quarter against Miami, they were 6-24 from the field, so they got really cold in the fourth, and they only lost by 4 points. So
yeah, I don't think Miami needs to concern themselves with the Lakers quite yet. They need to focus more on their Eastern Conference counterparts that they're likely to run into, like Chicago, like Boston. Boston, I'd certainly still rank as a top team in the East, regardless of Chicago's great play this season. Boston's the
first
team to
beat. Even after losing to New Jersey the other day,
it doesn't matter. As long as they're going to the playoffs healthy, yeah. That's the main concern.
But first, they had to get through the first round, which they played the New York Knicks as of now.
Yeah, we'll see. Good.
What about on the flip side? Should the Lakers be concerned that they're 0-2 against the Miami Heat this year?
Nah, no way.
No, I think the Lakers have proven consistently in the past few years that they bring it playoff time. That's all that matters.
And just because they won't meet them until the finals, if anything. So.
Yeah.
What did you think about Kobe Bryant the other day after the loss to the Heat, shooting around after the game for 90 minutes?
Yeah, that was a huge, huge story. When I was in Florida, that was all they were talking about with Kobe shooting around. Yeah, it just plays in more to the Kobe, the Black Mamba persona, a guy who's so dedicated to getting better, and he had obviously an off-shooting night that night, missed a big shot towards the end, so he went out and got some extra work, so good on Kobe.
Jay Triano, head coach of the Toronto Raptors, was actually on the Tim and Sid Uncut podcast the other day, and he had some very interesting things to say about Kobe Bryant and his work ethic and the fact that he wasn't surprised at all about this. He also had some interesting things to say about Chris Bosh and the whole Heat situation in general. So that interview is definitely worth checking out on thescore.com.
Shout outs to Sid and Tim.
Of course. You could also get it on iTunes, I believe. So it was a great interview, actually. I'm not a huge Triano fan, but the dude was... He was spitting hot fire.
Yeah, it was a very relaxed atmosphere in the studio there at the Score. That was great to listen to. You don't really get to hear Triano in that type of atmosphere. And it was very interesting to hear him a little off the record. It was very cool.
Could you quickly tell us about Jay Triano, what he said about Bosch? It was a good story.
I don't want to give it away. Okay. You have to listen to it.
All right.
No, he was basically commenting on Chris Bosh's request in Miami to have the ball a little bit more in his hands. And Triano just kind of flat out said, "You want the ball. Why did you leave?"
I love that.
It's a pretty fair assessment. Bosh had to know what he was getting himself into.
What did he say about Rujo? You said the draft pick. I don't know. I don't remember the story.
Yeah.
He said it well.
Draft the best player available.
Right.
And he threw some darts at poor Hoffa.
Hoffa went to BYU, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Him and Jim are probably...
Which Giannis thought he went to Boston College, which he was
Giannis,
wrong,
our
obviously.
Correspondent. Whatever.
So we mentioned Jay Triano's Toronto Raptors, and there's actually some new controversy swirling in the MLSE environment recently. The Teachers' Pension Plan, which owns 66% of MLSE, are reportedly looking to sell.
Yes.
How is this going to affect the Leafs and the Raptors?
I think the only real effect that we could see is perhaps Rogers putting all the Leafs-Raptors games that we all want to watch on one channel where we have to pay for them. So it's certainly something I'd be a little concerned about as a fan, whether or not we'll have the same access to these teams as we did previously without paying the extra money.
Well, while the teachers are at the negotiating table, so is the NFL, the PA, and the owners. And it's looking like a lockout is a definite possibility. Now we'll get to Mr. Adrian Peterson's comments in just
Jimmy's
a second.
Boy.
But Jimmy, is there going to be a 2011 NFL season?
You know what? I don't think so. I mean, I just feel like sooner or later they're going to come to an agreement. I mean, they're going to lose way too much money for not have a season this season. I think more likely it's going to be an NBA, but I think somehow they'll find a way to get things together.
The players have filed an injunction to block the lockout, and the hearing right now is scheduled for April 6th, so we'll see what happens there.
They even said that they're going to put out the schedule, too, in April, so...
Yeah, there's a lot of news floating around about possibly the player, potential NFL draftees not being allowed to go to the draft. That's what's
they even said they're going to have a year without a salary cap year.
Yeah,
so
we just need to have football next year. That's just it. Anyway, it happens. That's absolutely imperative that we need the NFL. It's something I can't live without. Won't live without.
At this point, there's a lot of posturing on both sides. Obviously, if the public is on your side, that's a good thing at this point. And Adrian Peterson may have lost some support for the players yesterday, was it?
Yeah.
What did he say, AK?
Modern-day slavery is what he said.
That's what he compared the players' current predicament to modern-day slavery. And I don't recall any slaves getting paid $10 million per season. So, yeah, I don't know, that's a little off there for AP. Certainly garner some bad press, which the players definitely don't need.
But I think he was talking about the people who work at the concession stands in the stadiums as well. So he wasn't just talking about the players.
You know, obviously, there's more far-reaching effects to the lockout than just the players and the owners. Obviously, the people.
The guy's a competitor. He wants to play. He loves the game. And why would he want to miss
the
season?
So do you defend AP's comments?
Well, I kind of have to. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he has his own opinion. I mean, he's right to say whatever he wants to say, but... I mean, he wants to play football. That's all that matters. I know.
The words may have been taken out of context a little bit, but AP, watch your mouth.
Yeah,
definitely. Be careful. Come on.
Leave the guy alone. Come on.
Sorry, Jimmy.
I love Adrian Peterson.
Coming up, we will preview the American League in baseball. We'll also talk quite a bit of Jays, and we'll welcome in our first ever in-studio guest in the Sports Radio
Jets. I am so excited.
But first, a segment that everyone has come to love and know as the Mangos Minute.
Oh, wow. Mango, 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 mango.
Mango, 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 mango. Now, Jimmy, we talked a lot about the Miami Heat.
Right.
And not to say that you are...
A baby?
Not to say that you're at LeBron James level or anything, but it's pretty close. I mean, like, if LeBron is 1A as far as popularity, you're probably 1B.
So, okay, sure. Thank you.
I just want to know. When was the last time that you cried, and what makes you shed a tear?
Last time I cried, I really can't remember, but if you want to go way back, I'm going to say when the Vikings lost the NFC Championship game to the New Orleans Saints. That hit me hard. I mean, I remember when they lost that game in overtime. I had that kind of, you know, the feeling when your throat kind of hurts? And then you don't kind of want to cry, but you're so mad and sad at the same time. That was probably the last time I cried. And, yeah, I guess. Is that good enough?
Nothing says Major League Baseball quite like a little Nelly.
That was a great tune. Almost as good as that Rebecca Black song that we listened to this morning, Friday.
Boy.
Almost as good.
Almost as good. Not quite. So, I'd like to welcome in good friend of the podcast, George Fidel. George, welcome.
Thank you, guys. I'm excited.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, George. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk a little bit Blue Jays before we get into the rest of the American League, go north of the border a little bit. And big news this this offseason was the Jose Bautista contract. After hitting 54 home runs last year, he got rewarded with a five-year, $65 million contract in the offseason. So is this the new face of the franchise for the Blue Jays, George?
I'm iffy on it, guys, to be really honest here. I mean, he just had one really great year. I mean, if you step out of Toronto, I would assume that he's probably the only Jay that guys there know, right? He's the only one that has that name. But to me, it's really going to depend on what he actually does now. The guy's been paid. The guy earned it, right? But now he's got to earn it for the next 5 years, right?
So what is he going to do this season? AK.
See, I'm a stats guy by nature, and if you look at Jose Bautista's season last year, there's actually a lot of ways in which he was unlucky. I know he had 54 home runs and seemingly never went into a slump, but his batting average in balls on play was only .233 compared to his career average of .270. So I think it's very possible we see Bautista hit 35, 40 home runs and have a much better batting average than he did. So you could see just as valuable a season from Bautista this year as you saw last year.
I'm always weary of players that peak at a late age. We've seen it with Jason Worth, who is cashing in with Washington these days. And Bautista is 30 years old. His average home run season in his previous years in baseball was 14 home runs. And his career average is pretty low as well. Last year, what, he had .260, something like that. It was easily a career high. So I don't know. I'm just so weary. I still think this guy is useful. I still think he's valuable. First of all, he's an outstanding defensive player. I don't know how useful he's going to be at third in comparison to in the outfield where he was just a star last year. But I don't know. I still expect maybe 20. Maybe even 30 home runs from this guy, but he's not coming close to 50. Let's be honest here.
I'm going to guess about 35, guys. But what really scares me is, what is he going to be worth when he turns 34? Is he really going to be worth this money that he's getting paid now? You know, this stellar arm that he's got now that we're not really going to use even, you know, playing third base. That's what really scares me off.
That's a very good question, George, especially considering the Jays just rid themselves of quite possibly one of the worst contracts in Major League Baseball history with Vernon Wells. Now you have a guy who obviously much, much smaller contract, but you still have to deal with this guy for 5 years, and how much is he going to be worth, like you said?
Compared to Worth, who did sign for, what was it, 7 years, guys?
7 years, $126 million.
Yeah, this was kind of a steal, but at least Worth had a solid 5 or 6 years of solid years to get that, right? But I don't know. I'm kind of worried here. I am worried.
Yeah, I definitely think it was a calculated risk in terms of the contract on both sides. Bautista very possibly could have a great year this year and be worth close to Jason Worth money this coming offseason. But then again, he could revert to his career norms and get nowhere near 5 years, $65 million. So I don't know, it's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out in the end.
There's a couple other players in the Blue Jays infield that intrigue me this season. Adam Lynn, who's going to be at first base this year, and Aaron Hill, who were both coming off of great seasons a couple years ago, and both had pretty disappointing years last year, I would say. Which one of them, if any, or both, do you see bouncing back this year?
Well, I talked about batting average and balls on play with Bautista, who hit .233 in batting average and balls on play. Aaron Hill had a historically low batting average and balls on play. Well, I've said that 3 or 4 times now, but he hit .196. In that respect this year, which is just unconscionably low compared to previous years of .288, .301, .324. So I expect a serious bounce back from Hill in terms of his batting average. His power was there last year, so I see no reason Hill can't hit .260, .270 with close to 30 home runs again, which would prove very valuable for the Blue Jays.
The combined difference between Hill and Lynn, if you put them together from 2009 to 2010, you got 22 home runs, 82 RBIs, and 69 runs. Together, that would make up a pretty good player. Just in the difference alone from 2 years ago to last year. George, which one of them is bouncing back?
You know what? I really like Lynn, guys. He has a really nice-looking swing. He's a great player. What happened to him last year, no one really knows. I guess the same could be said for a Hill. But you know what? Lynn is probably going to bat fourth, guys. And I would assume that he's going to have a really, really good year playing the field even now. So we'll see.
One thing about the Jays this year that will be fun to watch is all the young players that they've got up, most likely starting on opening day even. So I'm going to bring in Jimmy Mangos here because I know he's got he's got a favorite player that I'm in the list that I'm about to shout out here. But we got Travis Snyder, we got JP Arencibia, we got Kyle Drabek possibly in the rotation. Which one of those gentlemen, Jimmy, do you believe will have the best season?
Well, Barron, if he's healthy, I'm going to have to go with Travis Snyder. I mean, the kid, just what George said about Lynn with the swing, look at Travis Snyder's swing. He's got one of the greatest swings, not on the team, but in baseball. Every time I see him at the plate, I think he's going to crush the ball. I say he's going to hit 30 home runs this season if he stays healthy.
What did Jerry Howarth have to say about your prediction when you told him about that, Jimmy?
He said it wasn't bad. He said Barron injuries, it could happen. But
he threatened restraining order.
I don't know. This guy has a lot of pop. He's a big – and look at him at last year in the outfield. He improved last year, season throughout the year in the outfield, and he's improving as a player. So, and he's only 22 years old.
This will be the fourth – 23 years. Okay. This will be the fourth year that he's getting major league at-bats. And Adam Lind, the year that he broke out was his fourth year of getting major league at-bats. And I actually see a little bit – I know you were comparing their swings as far as structure – and I actually maybe see a little bit of a Lind breakout in Travis Snyder this year.
Yeah, they're certainly going to need guys like Snyder, Lind, and Hill to have big years to come anywhere near contending in the AL East. So John Farrell better hope that these guys bounce back and guys like Snyder take the next step.
You asked me how many home runs I think he's going to have. What about you guys?
Travis Snyder?
Yeah.
I would say a solid 25, guys.
I'll take the under on Jimmy's 30, but I'll take the over on 20, I think.
Yeah, somewhere 25 between. Sounds good. It's just, with him, it's one of those things where for years we have heard now, he's the next great Jay, right? So I think it's time now, guys. I think it's time for him.
Yeah, this is his year. He's got to step up and live up some of the expectations this year.
The one major difference I'm noticing in this Toronto Blue Jays lineup already in this kind of new era of Jays baseball is the speed, which is something that it's been a while. Shannon Stewart was actually the last Blue Jay to steal 50 bases. Do you remember when that was, AK?
1996.
98. 98 for Shannon Stewart. So Rajai Davis leading off this year. Is he stealing 50?
Well, manager John Farrell has indicated to the press, at least, that they will place a new emphasis on running. 50 steals, that's a lot of steals. But Rajai does have a history of racking him up quickly and pretty easily as well. The guy's a speedster. So I put the under on 50, but I think it'll be in the mid to high 40s for Rajai.
The Jays were 28th last year in stolen bases. Can a culture, when it comes to speed, be changed so quickly, George?
It needs to. I mean, the Jays got to change things up. I mean, they are starting it now. When you're looking at trading for a guy like Ghosts, you know, he is a speedster. He's a speed demon. He is unbelievably fast. Like, there's so many things that you can say about him. But Davis, I really like him. He's having an unbelievable spring. He's stealing bases. He's hitting. He might change things for us, guys. He really, really might.
Let's transition over to the pitching staff, if we can here. And it's also a very young pitching staff. So do you have a starter in mind that is due to break out this year? And do you have another one in mind maybe that might be a potential bust?
Okay. A guy I really like is Mark Zepchinski. Ooh. I don't know if he's actually going to gain a spot in the rotation. There's talk of Jesse Litch would be the fifth starter. But I know Bill James is very high on Zepchinski's potential for this year. And when Bill James speaks about a player, you got to take that into account.
And he's still pretty young, too. He's only 25 years old.
Yeah, the guy's got a lot of potential. He's high strikeout, low walk ratio. So that's something that certainly needs to be considered. So
Jimmy, I know you're high on Morrow. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the season that Brendan Morrow might have?
Well, just by looking at the spring training he's having, he's been dominant. He's been striking out, I think he struck out like 6-8 guys in the 3 innings in spring training. Last year, you know, he started off slow, but in the middle of the season, he started to get it, and that's when he became dominant. But I'm really looking, Morrow and Cecil, just because Cecil was dominant in the AL East, I think he went 12-3 or something like that, which is very impressive to go in that division.
Most Blue Jay fans will remember Morrow being sat early by the organization last year to rest his arm. And he was actually on pace if he pitched as many innings as Romero did last year for 255 strikeouts, which would have led the major leagues by over 20 strikeouts. Now, obviously, that might not come to fruition, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with Morrow if they take the leash off. George?
Morrow's stuff is just nasty, guys. Like he led the league in Ks over nine innings, I think it was, guys, and he's filthy. He's just a nasty, nasty guy. I could see him turning into a staff ace. So that'll be a steal for us. What a great, great trade there, eh?
Yeah, if you take away the first month of the season last year, Morrow's got as good numbers as anyone in the AL. So it's going to be very, very cool to see if he can keep it up.
Now, they have a crowded bullpen this year, which can be a good thing or it could be a bad thing as far as picking the gentleman who's going to be used to close out the games this year. So who do you go with out of the pen in the ninth inning?
Well, I think if Frank Francisco's healthy, you go with him. He's a guy who's consistent against righties, both righties and lefties. But
it's a massive if, though, eh?
Yeah, it's true. He's got that arm injury that's plaguing him a little bit. Actually, Octavio Dotel went down with a hamstring injury yesterday, too. So Jay's bullpen's a little bit nicked up right now. But if Francisco's healthy, I think he definitely should close.
It's interesting to note that all three of these new pitchers, Francisco, Octavio Dotel, and John Rausch, started off last year closing for their respective teams, and they all lost the job almost midway through the season. But all three of them actually looked better when they were in a setup role. So I don't know. Do you think any of these guys have what it takes to close out?
As long as they're better than Kevin Gregg, sure, why not?
Fair enough.
You know what, guys? There's a lot of hate for Gregg, but he wasn't that bad for us, was he? Come on now.
He was shaky. Every time he came to close the night, there was always like bases loaded or guys on base.
He certainly made the fans sweat. But right. He had, how many saves did Gregg have? Over 35, close to 35. So he did
around there.
How many did he blow, though?
Not that many.
Eight?
Not as many as you would think, but there was a number of situations where your kind of palms were sweaty and you were a little bit nervous.
A lot of times he came into the game, it was like 4-1, and then they would win 4-3 just barely, you know, so...
I think the lack of a true left-handed shutdown relievers could be a little bit of an issue for the Jays losing Scott Downs this offseason, but we're going to need guys like Jesse Carlson and David Percy to step up and fill the void. And
you know what, guys? I don't think that we've really had that ninth-inning threat since Billy Koch. I'm going to say it. He was
E.J. Ryan had a good year.
He had one, but, you know, I like Koch's stuff.
I think I had to go way back and go with Tom Hankins last time they had a good closer.
That is way back. And as most people know, Jimmy, the AL East is pretty good, right?
Not as good as it was 2 years ago, but yeah.
Well, I don't know about that. I think it's just getting better.
Really?
But the Blue Jays...
I have to disagree with you in that.
The Blue Jays don't get a lot of love in the division. And they're young, they're still growing, but do you foresee a time in the near future where they'll be able to compete with the Yankees and with the Red Sox?
This year, I don't see it happening. The next year might be a little bit of a stretch, too, but 2-3 years from now, I certainly see, once all those prospects come and certainly start to fulfill their potential, guys like Ghosts and Zach Stewart, Brett Lowry, who we actually haven't even discussed yet today, certainly a very hot prospect. Blue Jays traded Sean Markham for Brett Lowry. When those guys get going and they're in the lineup every day, I think you'll certainly see the Jays up there with the Yanks and the Red Sox.
I think there's a lot of negativity in Toronto when it comes to the Blue Jays as far as people just looking at this division, looking at teams with such high payrolls and thinking, okay, well, there's no way that we can compete. There's no way that the Blue Jays can reach that next level. But there's precedent here. I mean, this team, they were legit contenders for pretty much a decade from 83 to 93, and... things have changed a little bit as far as the landscape of baseball, but those teams that competed for that decade are almost eerily similar to what they have building here, in that there was a lot of young players that were being built up in the farm system, and obviously the Jays went out and made some big moves to get some big players when they were on the cusp back just before they won their World Series. But it'll be interesting to see if things go along that route. Will they be able and or willing to spend the money to get those big players that might push them over the edge? George, what do you think?
Rogers wants to, guys. And you know what? I think it does start with the fans wanting to actually come out. Rogers is willing to spend, but they got to have a reason to as well, right? Our farm system is absolutely amazing. It was ranked fourth, you know. A year ago, it was ranked, I believe, 28th.
Yeah.
So that's a massive jump in just a single year. And we're piling up guys right now. It's going to be, you know what, in 3 or 4 years, the Jays are going to be scary good, right? But the thing that I don't like is teams like the Yankees and the Sox, who can basically buy anyone. They don't need to draft anyone decent for the next 10 years. they really, really, really don't. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's true. We see the Yankees stockpiling these prospects like Jesus Montero and
trade him away.
And Benuelos. Yeah, guys. And realistically, they're probably going to trade those guys for a stud starting pitcher this year, whether it be Francisco Liriano or Felix Hernandez, someone like that. So it's really no worry for the Yankees. Obviously, having a nice farm system is good, but they're really just ultimately going to parlay it into established studs.
I think as of now, the Blue Jays have a better staff than the pitching staff than the Yankees do right now.
Yeah, I think that's
all they have
that's
is
a very fair argument, yeah.
Okay, I want to move on, but very quickly, prediction for the Jays this year. They were 83-79 last year. Or sorry, they were 85-77 last year, right?
I'll say maybe a few more wins, but still fair way out of the playoffs.
You know what, guys? I'm going to probably say 86 wins, and they'll probably finish fourth.
The line actually is set at 76.5, so we're
really?
All taking the over on
wow.
that. Yeah,
76.5. Meant to visit party bets
that's
after another show.
The Markham trade probably killed that line, eh?
They're interesting.
Maybe. Well, they're young, so I guess they figure that the best is to come in a few years from now. But let's look at the rest of this so-called best division in baseball. And the winner last year of the AL East, not the Red Sox, not the Yankees, but the Tampa Bay Rays. And obviously they lost some big names this offseason with Carl Crawford leaving, Carlos Peña, Matt Garza, Soriano, the closer, as well. So can this team still compete with the elite teams in the division?
The easy answer is no, and I think that might actually be the right answer. Obviously Tampa's relying a lot on veterans like Johnny Damon and Manny Ramirez, who might be approaching the tail end of their careers. Both those guys had pretty subpar seasons by their standards last year. Another thing that really concerns me when looking at Tampa Bay is their bullpen. They lost Rafael Soriano, they lost Dan Wheeler, who went to Boston, and J.P. Howells recovering from arm surgery this past offseason. So right now you could be looking at guys like Joel Peralta, Jake McGee, just Kyle Farnsworth, guys who really aren't established back-end stoppers, and that could really cost them, especially in the AL East.
They've still got some young players, though, that could step in and fill the void of the players that left. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if Desmond Jennings gets some play this year in the outfield, but
Desmond's
he can very
good.
Realistically step into a Carl Crawford-like role.
Is Tampa Bay not better off going with Desmond Jennings than Johnny Damon? I don't understand the rationale by keeping Jennings in the minors for one more year. When
you don't think Damon can resurrect his career this year?
I don't know. He looked awful in Detroit. I remember I had him on a bunch of fantasy teams last year. It was a massive disappointment.
What about Manny, George? Do you think he can get back to his heydays in the AL East?
You know what? The talent's there, but is his mind there? It's the problem with Manny. It's been the problem with Manny since day one, right?
You don't think he has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder this season?
I don't know. It depends. Like, is he in shape, guys? Is he willing to work hard? Is he willing to teach there? You know, they are going to look to Manny, those younger guys, to be that guy, right? But I don't know if it's in him. The talent's there, definitely.
I'm actually going to go out on a limb here and predict Manny Ramirez for my comeback player of the year.
I like that call.
Yeah.
I
see a very Vlad-like year, kind of similar to the year Guerrero had last year in Texas from Manny this year in Tampa. So I don't know. Like, Carlos Peña, he's a great player, but what do you have there aside from home runs? I think Manny can step in and fill the void offensively for this team. I wouldn't count them out yet. They're not dead.
Yeah, they have Manny slotted in the four spot behind Evan Longoria, so that's certainly an enviable position for a player to be in. So I love that call for Manny. I think all the reports coming out of Tampa are that he's in shape and motivated this year, so you could see a very fat year for Manny.
The team of note in the division is the Red Sox picking up Carl Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez in the offseason, which is the biggest acquisition for them this year.
The Gonzo signing, it's got to be, guys. That guy is going to murder it there. In that right field fence being so low there too, he's going to have a monstrous year. Monstrous.
Averaged 32 home runs in his 5 years at Petco Park.
He will hit.
And that's not the best hitter's park, is it?
There, easily hit 40 now. Easily.
40? I think you'll also see a ton of doubles. Adrian Gonzalez is notorious for poking the ball all around the ballpark, so you could see tons of balls off the Green Monster, just everywhere. Adrian Gonzalez is a very versatile hitter. He's going to be perfect for Fenway.
The Red Sox, too, have a lot of players that are looking to bounce back this year. Dustin Pedroia, Kevin Youkilis, Jacoby Ellsbury. Jimmy, who do you think has the best chance at having a big year out of those three?
Sorry, I just wanted to say that Carl Crawford could also get a lot of triples as well.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the big muscle
and the speed.
Right, but out of those three, who'd you say? Beckett,
Pedroia, Youkilis, Ellsbury.
Pedroia. I love Pedroia. He always finds a way to get on base. His base percentage is like one of the best in baseball. It dropped a little bit last year, but I really like Pedroia.
And fantasy leagues too. I mean, this is a weak year for second baseman, and Chase Utley is already looking to have some injury problems in Philadelphia. So Pedroia could be big both in fantasy and in reality this year in Boston. Now we'll move over to New York quickly while we're talking about the AL East. You can't discount the Yankees, but did they regress this year?
Big time.
Is the pitching staff good enough to keep them in line with the Red Sox?
I don't think it is at this current moment. Obviously, Sabathia is a stud, top of the rotation guy, but behind him, there's some question marks. Phil Hughes was not nearly as dominant in the second half as he was in the first half. Then you have a huge wild card in A.J. Burnett. You have no idea what you're going to get from him. And then the Yankees might be relying on guys like Bartolo Colon, Freddie Garcia to round out their rotation. That's disgusting. That is disgusting. You cannot be competitive. Well, obviously, their bats would say otherwise, but I don't see any possible way you can do anything with those guys in your rotation. They need to make a move.
How do they have room in that clubhouse for both Bartolo Colon and CC Sabathia?
Better,
is what I want to know.
Up with a new catering company for those boys.
Is Derek Jeter done? George, does he still have anything left in the tank?
Derek Jeter will never be done. See, as long as his heart beats, man. That guy is the Yankees. He is the Babe Ruth of this era. You know, they are paying him for his name. You know, I don't think they really care about it, but his stats at this point. You know what I mean? Like, he is having a pretty good spring, though, guys. So you never know. Derek Jeter works really, really, really hard.
Derek Jeter's always been a guy who's been at the top of the Yankee lineup. At what point does Joe Girardi have to consider moving him down? You guys like Brett Gardner, who's an on-base machine. A guy that was almost close to 400 last season. I think in the high 380s before he got injured. And do you move Jeter down to 8, 7, 8?
I don't think you do.
I don't know. Jeter's got to go to somewhere 7th, 8th, you know, 9th.
I don't know, man.
Me.
Like, this guy has the heart of a Kobe Bryant almost.
Definitely.
And he has something to prove this year. And people think he's so old. Meanwhile, like, he's only 1 year older than Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah.
So I think he still has something left. I wouldn't.
Different
games, I wouldn't count
though.
Out Jeter. It is
know.
A different
his,
game, but.
His swing has gotten slower, guys.
His glove, even though he won a gold glove last year, Manny felt it wasn't nearly deserved. That's another play. The rumors of him going to the outfield before the end of his newly signed contract, too. So, I don't know. The Jeter is a very big storyline in New York.
What about the catching situation, too? I don't, like, who's there?
Russell
Posada
Martin.
Or Russell
Martin. Martin's going to be starting at catcher, and then I believe
good old Canadian boy
is at DH this year. So that'll be interesting to see.
A lot
too.
Of question marks for the Yankees this year. A lot of.
For sure. So very quickly, Jimmy. Winner of the division, winner of the AL East, who you got?
Red Sox for sure, no doubt.
George?
I got the Sox easily.
Red Sox all around?
I want to say the Yankees just because I feel they're going to make a trade for somebody good, a good starter, but at this point I'll take the Red Sox. But I think the Yankees will be right there with another piece in the rotation.
I truly think the Sox 1 through 9 is going to be terrifying, guys. They are going to be a scary bunch to pitch against.
A very strong pitching staff. Too,
very good team.
For the fantasy community, give me a sleeper in the division, AK.
Guy, I got you have two for you. Josh Beckett is one. I think this guy's due for a very big bounce back season. His numbers weren't reflective of what actually transpired last year. He was pretty unlucky. Speaking of another guy who was unlucky was James Shields in Tampa Bay. This is a guy whose home
unlucky.
Run per fly ball
inconsistent.
Fly ball per home run was off the charts. Very, very unlucky. I think it's going to see a lot more balls stay in the field of play this year, and you're going to see both those guys back to fantasy relevance.
Really?
I'm going a little bit younger here. I think Brian Mattis of the Orioles is going to have a very big year. He was 7-0 in his last 10 starts last year with 50 strikeouts, and 5 of those games were against teams in the AL East. So he's still very young, still kind of raw, but I'm going Mattis.
I like that. Yeah, Baltimore is an interesting team to look at, too. They added some veterans.
They can hit the ball pretty good. They got big hitters. You got Jones. Who did they get? Vladimir Guerrero?
Vladdy and Derek Lee to go with Markakis and Brian
Roberts. They're going to get a lot of runs this year.
Yeah,
for sure. It's just the pitching staff and whether or not it'll hold up.
Who's that? The staff? Jeremy Guthrie?
What is it? Jeremy Guthrie, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now, speaking of whether or not somebody will hold up, Justin Morneau transitioning to the AL Central. He is key for the reigning champions of the division, Minnesota Twins. Does this guy stay healthy this year, George?
I hope so, guys. He is a great talent. I mean, they need him big time. He's the heart there with Maurer. They really need him.
Yeah, I think I remember that hit, that play at second base with John McDonald kneeing Justin Morneau like it was yesterday. I still, when I'm watching it, you didn't expect anything to come of it. You just thought, oh, I just got kneed, maybe a little shaken up. But the concussion obviously lingered for quite some time. He's just getting into his first spring training games now. So I don't know if he can, the concussion issues, he might be over. But as we saw with Mark Savard last year, who came back for the playoffs, and the concussion issues resurfaced in the preseason. So I hope Justin Morneau stays healthy. The guy was having a monster year before he went down with a concussion, so that's obviously a determining factor for the Twins this year.
There might not be a wild card bigger in the AL Central than Miguel Cabrera, just based on what's gone on the last couple months. Is this guy's head in the right place? Should there be a concern surrounding the Detroit Tigers this year and whether or not Miguel Cabrera, whether or not he's able to contribute what he's brought to the table the last few years, George?
Guys, you know what? The talent's there, and I really hate saying this, but this guy's had this drinking issue for years now. Why has no one stepped in and said, Miggy, you've got a serious problem?
Yep.
You know, the owner who's paying this guy millions and millions and millions of dollars, someone's got to do something for his own health, you know? Like, it's a terrible
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. It's bigger than baseball at
for
this point.
Such a talented guy right now, too.
If it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, that's Miggy's been. You know, he has likes to pound back some. What was it? Scotch? Drinking the scotch in front of the police
the
officer. Drinking some scotch. You know, let it be. Obviously, you'd like to hear him not be pulled over by police officers and chugging hard alcohol in front of them. But
it's the image too of the Tigers, right?
Yeah, but this is a guy who's probably the best player, if not in baseball, aside from Albert Pujols, certainly in the American League, one of the best hitters out there. So it's not like you can just trade a guy like Miguel Cabrera away. This is something you have to deal with, whether it be internally or sending him to some rehabilitation. But you got to have Miguel Cabrera in your lineup at all costs.
Do you drop him at all in fantasy drafts?
No, I don't think that has any relevance to the fantasy community.
So it looks like we have another three-team race in the AL Central again this year with the White Sox rounding that out. And they picked up a big bat this year in Adam Dunn. You have the over or the under on 40 home runs for Dunn this year?
I think he'll be around 40. Dunn's a guy who has hit 40 before and will
consistently
hit 40 again.
Cincinnati.
Yeah. And Chicago's field is very receptive for home run hitters like Dunn, especially for lefties. So
yep.
Dunn's going to have a fat year.
Yep. He hit 38 home runs in each of the last two seasons in Washington, which is certainly not a hitter's park as well. So I think Dunn could be a sleeper in fantasy leagues this year.
He's ranked pretty high up there to begin with.
Winner of the Central, George.
Tigers. Royals. I got with Tigers.
Royals, Jimmy?
No. It's up to. I want to say the Twins again. I love the Ron Gardenhire, what he's done with the team, and I can't go wrong with the Twins. Twins or the White Sox, but I'll stick with the Twins.
Every year I hate on the Twins, and every year they find a way to get it done. So I'm gonna stick with the Twins.
Guys, you don't like the Chicago White Sox? I don't understand how you don't like the White Sox in this division. It's a team with a stacked rotation.
A lot of power.
Sure. Adding Edwin Jackson.
Edwin Jackson.
Yeah, what's wrong? Edwin Jackson was great towards the end of last season.
ERA is usually over five.
No, it's not.
He's Gordon Beckham done well in the AL.
And Gordon Beckham will have a breakout season this year. You can mark me down for that.
Really? Okay.
This is a guy who's an absolute stud. And with the addition of Dunn, guys like if Canerco and Rios can repeat what they did last year, I think Chicago's a lock.
Now, the discussion in the AL West begins and ends with the Texas Rangers. Are they going to repeat this year? Can anyone challenge them is the bigger question. You got Oakland, you got the Angels, you got the Mariners. Are any of these teams good enough to even come close to the offensive juggernaut they have in Texas?
See, a lot of people are concerned with Texas losing Cliff Lee, and obviously that's a big loss for them, but a guy like Derek Holland, I expect to have a very big year. He was very, very solid, and I think he pitched around 50 innings last year, had more strikeouts than innings pitched, and they are supposedly considering moving Neftali Feliz to the starting rotation, and that could be very, very intriguing to watch as both a fantasy owner and a fan of baseball, because this guy's just a flamethrower and could be a very, very nice piece for Texas in the rotation.
Now, the Angels have historically been the team to watch here in the division. Vernon Wells, the big ad this season. How quickly will the Angels fans learn to hate Vernon Wells, Jimmy?
Let me tell you, once the Angels start having guys on base, and when Wells comes up to the plate, they're going to see double play every time Wells comes up.
Or a pop-up.
Or they are. The only time they see Wells get a home run or RBIs is when the game's out of hand, whenever they're winning big or losing big. That's when you see Wells put up his stats.
Does anyone think that any other team can challenge the Rangers this year?
Seattle, maybe?
The Rangers got it this year, guys. They are a talented bunch. The only thing that I am scared here is about Lee. You know, losing Lee is going to be massive for them. I don't know where those wins are going to possibly come from. You know, losing Lee's that was your ace, guys. Now what?
I think if Seattle can hit the ball, they'll be in the race for that, too. Because they're one of the worst hitting teams, but have a very great pitching staff, too.
Seattle is an atrocious team. Atrocious. After Felix Hernandez, have you seen their rotation?
Seattle's going to finish last, guys, in that division.
A lot of games they've lost, like 2-1, 3-2.
Yeah, it's because they can't get any hits.
Exactly.
But I will say that L.A., the Angels, might have the best 1-2 run-two punch in the rotation with Dan Heron and Jared Weaver in all of baseball. So maybe not all of baseball, but certainly
up there. As long as he's not Jeff Weaver, then it's fine.
Jared Weaver, one of the best pitchers in all last year.
All right, we got a minute left, so just wrapping up the AL preview for this week. We all got Rangers there, or?
I'll go with the Rangers, but I think the Angels be right there, too.
Okay, fair enough. Next week, we'll be previewing the National League. We have some other surprises in store for us as well. I just want to thank George Fidel for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
You can check George out. He's going to be writing weekly columns on the Blue Jays on prosportsblogging.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at GeorgeF9. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So definitely give him a shout out on Twitter as well.
Be sure to follow the Sports Radio Jacks at Sports Jacks as well. Right now we only have 2 followers. We're looking to get to maybe 10 or 20 by the end of the week. So
you got me, guys, for sure.
You can follow AK at Aaron_Korolnik on Twitter. You can follow me at JLou_Sports. And you can follow Jimmy.
Of the streets.
He's coming to a strip club near you, ladies and gentlemen. So that's it for today. We will see you next week.